It's Monday.
Shh, be very, very quiet. It's Ginny. She's in her natural habitat. Yes, she's with someone, but who is she with? All we know for sure, it's Monday, and she's drinking a mocha. It must be Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.
So, Miss Jen Holmes, thank you so much for joining me on Monday Mocha.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I love the fact that I've got a Brit on the show because I've been full of Americans and Australians, so you are representing the Queen.
I know. I'm actually really aware of my accent right now. I'm like, okay, sorry, really British.
It's the Queen's English. Fantastic. Well, Jen, I want to ask you, what's the first thing that you do when you get out of bed on a Monday?
This is not glamorous at all, but the very first thing that I do is take my dog out to the toilet. So that's nowhere near as nice as you like it or zen as you like it. But it's actually, to be fair, actually, it's even just go through that process of kind of going out in the fresh air, very first thing is actually, as much as it's for that particular thing, it's actually quite therapeutic and kind of like sets me up quite nicely for getting some air in my lungs and getting started. So that is quite nice in some ways.
Is caffeine involved at all in that morning routine?
Caffeine is definitely involved. The next thing is getting my coffee. I've actually started making my own soya milk. So sometimes I actually have to do that as well in the morning. But I'm kind of going a lot more green with the way that I'm kind of approaching things. And that only uses kind of like glass and obviously it's homemade. So that's kind of part of my routine sometimes in the morning as well.
Wow, you make your own milk. You're probably the first guest that's ever said that.
Yeah, I just kind of acutely aware of all the plastic that I was going through with regular milk. So yeah, I just kind of made the switch and it's actually surprisingly easy. It's like two ingredients, soya beans and water.
Well, Jen, tell me, how do you prepare for a Monday? Do you have any particular routines?
I would say that I don't like to launch right into work. I kind of learned from that probably about 2 years ago where I completely just was burning out. I was just going straight into work and by lunchtime, I just had nothing left in me. So now I try to, actually the first thing that I try to do after my coffee is dive into a novel or some kind of book just to, I don't know, kind of get my brain going and kind of tune into getting the synapses going, but also kind of getting to that storytelling creative mode as well. So that's definitely something I do in the morning. And then I try to do some yoga as well, because I feel like when I don't do some kind of movement exercise, my energy just gets really stagnant and I can't think as well. And I'm just not really tuned into anything. So that's normally the next thing I do. And then after that, I like to journal. So journaling, I also kind of do a lot of channeling, which we might be able to go into a bit later, but kind of getting guidance from the kind of silence and the peace and the spiritual realm is something that I really like to do to set me up for the next part of the day.
That's fantastic, Jen. I love how you positioned a lot of your statements as "I try to," which I'm assuming means that you don't always get it right.
Yeah, I don't always do it and I don't stick to it in a really regimented way, because sometimes I, you know, this is actually part of the patriarchal hangover, I feel, which is a lot of the work that I do, is that we really punish ourselves when you're like, oh, I said that I would do this and I haven't done it and I'm terrible. I can't believe I'm doing this. Like, why can't I stick to a routine? Whereas I feel like, you know, if your body is calling for you to do one thing over another, if you're feeling in yourself that, you know, you might have a lion, that's okay. You know, you can't beat yourself up for that. So I try to be quite fluid with it and not stick to a really regimented way of being.
That's pretty awesome, Jen. And I love the fact that part of your journey was you used to live in the city, you and your husband, then you moved out into the country or the greener pastures of England. Was there ever a time where you hated Mondays?
Yes, I would say I did. But actually, after I went traveling and I had this kind of really profound insight that I feel like didn't probably take me going around the world for a year to figure out, but it's that everyone kind of has the same routine and they're doing the same kind of things, no matter where they are. So I was in the foothills of Vietnam and these tribes, they were talking about going to the hairdressers and kind of waking up and, oh, I should be doing exercise, but I'm not. And I was thinking, wow, they literally have the same problems that we have. And the same thing on Monday where they want to grumble. And I just thought, you know, I don't need to be thinking like this. I'm all the way over here in Vietnam, seeing the same routines, the same thought patterns. So humans have this collective way of kind of making problems where they maybe just need to change their perspective a bit. So after that, when I came back, I actually just, I didn't do that as much anymore, and very, very rarely did I fall into that mindset.
I'm not sure what you did before you did what you do now in coaching and stuff, but what did you do before, and did your job and what you did spent most of your time on, which I'm assuming is your job, impact how you viewed Mondays?
It was definitely something that influenced it and made it harder for me to get into that perspective of kind of the creation mode and knowing that I'm making my own choices here. What I was doing actually before is working at asset management in the centre of London.
Asset management, Jen. I would not, knowing you for a half a less than a year, I could not picture that now.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty crazy. So I was managing a £1 billion portfolio of properties. Jeez. And it was my job to kind of increase the asset value of those. So I was literally, you know, the grey suits, the going in, the corporate this and the boardroom that. So I was really in the thick of it. And being in that very kind of high pressure environment, I became much better at not adding to that pressure by making my own life harder and hating what I was doing. So I'd always try to sort of switch my mindset up and see why it was great that I would wake up in the morning and go to this well-paid job and kind of deal with the people I was dealing with. So I was always trying. I didn't always succeed because I'm human, but that was always something that I was working on and kind of actively trying to change my mindset around.
Jen, it's really interesting how you've kind of seemingly always made that effort to try to center yourself no matter what chaotic things were going on in your life. I'm wondering if your support system had anything to do with that, which is going to be the segue to my next question. Who are the five people that you spend the most time with or invest the most time with, and one word that you would use to describe them?
The five people, that's funny because now, as I live in the country, there's pretty much only one person that I spend most of my time with, and that's my husband. He is just like pretty crazy. If anyone's sort of been following our vlogs, you'll see that he's got ADD and he's like very happy with it. He's bouncing off the walls most of the time. So for me, he's very lively, very entertaining, very positive and supportive. And yeah, he's really a pleasure to be around. I'm trying to think of the other four people. I mean, a lot of the other people that I spend around are either my clients or people who are working in the same kind of coaching industry as me. So we jump on calls and kind of share ideas and things like that. So a lot of them are really kind of unfolding into this flow state, the feminine way of being, exploring, creating new paradigm shifts in consciousness and things like that. So they tend to be quite introspective and reflective and quite awakened, really, I would imagine.
It's funny because when I get my guests to say that, it's all those words that you mentioned, it's pretty indicative of your character too.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, your own energy will be attracted to others who are sort of sharing. I mean, I guess that could be the law of attraction, really, is that you share that space and you share those mindset shifts and you're learning from each other. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It's fantastic, Jen. And I'm going to move on to some lighter questions. Do you take your phone to the bathroom with you?
Yes, I do. I don't meditate in the bathroom.
Where do you draw the line for phone use in the bathroom? Like, do you take phone calls? Do you mute the phone when the plop happens? Like, how does it roll?
I pretty much use it to just watch YouTube videos. Sometimes I'll play Spotify while I'm in the shower, but I don't like take phone calls. And actually, that is, I'm wondering if that's because I have no signal where I am or because I choose not to. Probably say because I choose. I wouldn't do that, I don't think. So I think anyone who's on the other end of the line is safe. It's all good.
So if I call you, I'll know that you're not going to be in the bathroom.
Yeah, I won't be in the bathroom. And if I was, you'd hear the echo fading away as I came into the bedroom. So
that's good to know, Jen. Jen, can we talk about a moment in your life where you made a huge shift in the way that you think?
Wow, that would be, and this is bringing out the woo for you.
Love the woo.
Yeah. Last October, when I bought this book called The Akashic Records, and I was essentially, you did this meditation, then you open up the records, which is supposedly this kind of spiritual realm where all of the records of your past, present, and future are held. And I was like, great, this sounds amazing. I'm going to try this. So you ask yourself a question, and then you answer it with your mind, and then you answer the same question after you've opened the record. So I was sitting there waiting for some kind of ghost to come through the wall, feeling really nervous. And actually nothing happened. But then I just felt this really weird sensation in my hands. And I found that I was writing from third person. I was referring to myself as we. And then I honestly, it scared the hell out of me. Wow. But since then, I've kind of really unfolded with it and leaned into it. And I've been kind of working with other people around it, speaking to this realm myself. And not once in the whole time this has happened that I've not got completely spot on advice and guidance for myself and others that I've worked with has literally made their jaw drop. So I still don't understand it, but since that's happened, it's really kind of opened me up spiritually to believing there's more than beyond what we see, really.
The Akashic Records, did Joanne Turner have something to do with that?
She didn't. I'd say that I was kind of curious about it before.
Right.
And actually it was so interesting because we were working together and she was into this whole spiritual thing. And then I disappeared off the radar for about 2 months and I came back and I was like, I'm channeling, I'm speaking to the masters, I'm doing. Wow. She was like, okay, who are you? And I was like, I don't know who I am.
So you left as Jen, but you came back as Jen plus 10 enlightened masters.
Yeah, I did. It was like some kind of Star Wars moment, but yeah, it was all good.
So there's more of you to get to know, which is fantastic, and that's why we have podcasts.
Yeah.
But tell me, given that you are all up in the woo, do you have a mantra or affirmation that you stick to and that you repeat every day?
Oh, there's so many. I'd say one that I bring myself back to is, and this is something that actually came from the Akashic Records, is release it all and be guided from the silence. Because I feel like it's so easy for me, having come from the corporate side and just growing up in a society where thinking is so lauded as being the ultimate way of being, whereas actually so much guidance and so much information kind of arrives to you when you allow yourself to receive it, and you can only allow yourself to receive it if you empty out your mind. So that's something that when I find myself thinking, oh my God, why am I not doing this? And how can I do that? And well, the next thing for this, just, okay, release it all, be guided from the silence.
Well, moving to a couple more lighter questions, Jen, did you ever receive a friend request on Facebook from someone you didn't particularly like? And how did you respond?
Oh God, I'd say I receive friend requests all the time. I would say that I tend to just delete them pretty much. I'll kind of get a vibe for their kind of profile, and if I'm not feeling it and it doesn't jive with me, then I'll just ignore it or kind of leave it for long enough and then ignore it. I haven't sort of sent any nasty messages or anything like that and say, oh, you know, why are you adding me or anything like that. It's not really my style, and I feel like that creates a negativity in me that I don't like. So yeah, I'll just kind of ignore and let it go.
No, that's fantastic. Let's talk more about the woo. You were saying before about how, you know, you went away for 2 months and then you started channeling and stuff. Was the podcast journey that you started, obviously you've got a great podcast called Curiously You, which talks about, I guess, all the things that women tend to be curious about in their lives. A lot of it is inclined to spirituality or creating a life that you love. Do you reckon that was a vehicle in kind of starting this, I guess, coaching business for you?
I'd actually say, and it's funny because earlier you were asking about the five people that you spend most of your time around. And it was actually through doing the podcast that I found myself in this position of connecting with so many women that were so much further ahead on that journey than I was. And simply being in their energy, speaking with them, being around them, understanding their experiences, got me more curious about what it was that I was missing and what it was that I was kind of seeking for myself. And so I think through that journey and through that kind of beingness around them, that kind of unfolded that faster for me and got my curiosity kind of on hyperdrive. If that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. So now your kind of full-time profession, like you went from, you know, being an asset manager, managing like all these liquid real estate accounts or property accounts that you were talking about. Now you're doing coaching to something in a more of a less tangible space, let's just say. How did you get your mind around that? That's quite a big shift.
I've always been curious about the mind and consciousness and the psych. I did psychology at university. I was thinking about kind of taking that further, but at that point I was extremely ambitious and I didn't want to wait until 60 to be on a decent paycheck. So I was like, I'm going to be an asset manager. So I kind of went after that gung-ho, but I'd always had that interest and that desire to explore the mind more. So yeah, I just feel like that has been quite a big influence that led me into coaching. And the thing with coaching is that what I love about it is that it's future focused. And it doesn't, unlike therapy, which I think definitely has its place and is needed by many people, therapy tends to reflect backwards, kind of ruminate, make sense, unravel to get you back to a place of neutral. Whereas coaching looks at possibilities, explores what your resources are, what's available to you, what you can create. So it's a lot more forward thinking. So that's really what led me on the journey to coaching over kind of going into therapy and kind of exploring the avenue of psychology, which is where I originally came from.
It's kind of manifested into how it was supposed to be. You went away for 2 months and you came back, I guess, with a huge shift where you would be able to access certain resources or sources that you weren't able to before. So can you talk us through how that happened and as tangible as you can make it?
I guess I'd been exploring things like energy work and Reiki, and as I said before, kind of working with people who were quite intuitive and seemed to have these abilities. I was like, oh, I want to know how to do that. And I guess I kind of opened myself up to that area, and I was just in this kind of receptive mode, I think. So when I had that experience that I described earlier, I was kind of waiting for the ghost to come through the wall. I think I was just in that state where I was ready for it, and I was just open and curious and wanting to see what might happen, rather than, I think, if you go into it thinking this is never going to work, this is just absolute rubbish, then it won't come to you, because as I've understood from working with from this other realm, we have complete free will in everything that we do. So if you choose to not have that arrive to you, then it won't. But I was making that choice at that point to become open to it, and it happened, and it keeps getting stronger and stronger.
I'm just kind of speechless about hearing that, but it's true what you said. If you're open to it, you do allow it to come in, and it's forever shifted what you do for a living now. So do you do just coaching, or do you do these kind of channelings or Reiki healings as well?
I actually, at the moment, I'm doing the Akashic sessions with women and following up with an integration session, because what I was doing was kind of doing these amazing Akashic sessions, getting all of this information and sharing their highest truth. And they literally were just looking at me with these like goggle eyes thinking, oh my God, I've just shattered their world. And now I'm just sort of sending them out and saying, have a great life. So what I'm now doing is trying to actually take what comes through and then use it to create, you know, a plan going forward, and you know, using that information to integrate with them and their mindset and their way of being, so that it becomes a part of them rather than something that they've just received and, you know, feeling in a bit of flurry about it. And that tends and sometimes does unfold into more coaching. And I feel like there's a lot of power that comes from combining the Akashic stuff and accessing those realms and all of that guidance, but also combining with the real world, you know, actual goal setting coaching. You know, because we're manifest beings, we kind of have to function in day to day. So having that combination of kind of non-physical and physical actually is quite powerful, I found.
No, that makes total sense. I was thinking too, and I find this to be quite potent no matter what part of the world that you're in, but it seems to be, in terms of participation rates in a lot of spiritual activity or personal development, a lot of the participation is from women. Why do you think that is, Jen?
That's interesting. Maybe women are more vocal, or maybe it's, sometimes I wonder if it's just the perspective that I am taking myself, and that I enjoy working with women and I tend to listen to them more. So I'll be following them on Instagram, or they'll be friends on Facebook. So I think it can lead you to think that women are maybe more into it than men are. Whereas I don't know, I think men have their own way of relating to it. However, saying that, if that is not true, I think a lot of it might be to do with men are really struggling from this, as I said, the patriarchal kind of society we've been living in for so long, where if you're believing in the non-physical, then you're kind of weak, or you're crazy, or you're, you know, all of those things that men can't afford to be in the way that our culture has set them up into. It's kind of seen as like a more soft feminine way of kind of relating, you know, intuiting and going with your gut and all of that stuff. Is you can't get your hands around it in a way that, or your head around it in a way that makes sense. So maybe that's part of it, but I don't know if that's actually a fact or not. But if it was, I would say that would probably be why.
I don't know if it's a fact either. I've just observed for the spiritual school that I go to, and I've noticed certain meditation groups, majority are women. And I'm just wondering if it's because a lot of female history has to do with, you know, equality and oppression. And, you know, there were women who had spiritual beliefs and practices that were burnt at the stake. So I'm wondering if this is sort of a revolution going on in terms of our minds opening and our hearts opening into this new kind of way of exploring this other realm.
I definitely agree with you on that. I've had so many people from all random places kind of reaching out to me and saying, oh, I'm really interested in the divine feminine and feminine rising and all, and that would just not be a conversation that was being had about 5 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, if you look back on movies and things like that, it was always women, you know, trying to be like men, kind of, we have the same rights as men, and we
exactly
kind of trying to mirror how they, whereas now we're getting into that place where really wanting to explore what it means to be in our feminine. What does it look like to be this creative, flowing force that, you know, is here in the world and makes up half of the population? So there is a lot to unpack going forward, and it's an exciting time, I think.
It is. One of my teachers, Shakti Durga, says that she uses a Hindu reference when she describes this. She says that, you know, in order for everything to exist, there needs to be a combination of the Shiva, which is the male consciousness, and the Shakti, which is the female consciousness. So the Shiva is obviously the thought or the concept, and the Shakti is the energy that pushes that concept. So it's just interesting to see a merging of these two coming up. I mean, especially when you think about the Me Too movement and everything like that, it's just, there's certain shifts that are breaking out, which is great to see.
And it's so interesting for me, having worked with the Akasha now, and one of the things that came through very strongly was the fact that God, although they never say God, they say the creator, is in essence more of a feminine energy.
Yeah.
Because the creator is creation. She creates things, you know, she, and then you have, like you said there, the masculine concept, whose role is to be the container or the upholder, but in not in a controlling way, just in a way that there is a place and a space within which God, the creator, can create. So all of this stuff is coming through in my writing and all of the channeling that I'm doing, which I'm saying it now, I'm like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but that's literally, this is the sort of stuff that's come through. And somehow that actually makes me feel more connected to it, because all this time I've always thought it's more of a masculine presence, so yeah, the father and all that kind of stuff, whereas it's more of the mother figure. So I don't know, somehow that lands better for me.
Yeah. I was going to say, Jen, going through this and, you know, coming back with these additional gifts, let's just say for want of a better term, how did you turn that into a business? Like, where did you start with that? And if anyone kind of has a talent or a passion, what would you recommend them to do to turn it into a business or a form of income?
One of the most powerful books that I've read is a book called The Prosperous Coach by Rich Litvin. And one of the things that one of the main sort of points that he makes in this is that you have to put in if you want to get anything out. So from my perspective, I always try to give as much value up front as possible. In fact, I try and actually almost push people away so that they are absolutely sure that it's the right choice for them. And this sounds so counterintuitive, and it's not something that I'm trying to do. It's the fact that when you do that, you're setting up a space for them where they can make their own choices, and they've had all of this upfront value. They've managed to connect with you. So it then becomes not a sale, but just a natural flowing that you then kind of work together. So that for me, if you want to get started in this realm, is to reach out to as many people as you know and you actually know in real life, not kind of random as on Facebook, and just start saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. Do you know anyone who would benefit from this? I'm offering, you know, a 45-minute session, and then just give it away freely. Just, you know, be open and abundant with it and keep doing that, because eventually it's just the laws of the universe. You will get back manifest, like loads more fold. So that's a principle that I, you know, kind of abide by, and think it works.
No, that's a great kind of, that's kind of one that I go with too, you know, work for free. I mean, that's a tactic, I guess, behind the concept is work for free, and then the laws of the universe will just take over and do what it needs to. And it's interesting that you said before how you said that you not intentionally make it difficult for the person, but I guess in a way it's your way of putting out an intention there to work with people who are only serious about their journey.
Exactly. Because I feel like if you start putting out this needy, desperate desire, then people aren't, even if they on a mental level can't feel that, they can feel it in their body, and it just creates this tension. I think, I don't know, it doesn't work well, it doesn't flow well, and it's actually for me completely against being a coach, which is to be there in the highest good of the person that you're working with and make it a partnership. So, yeah, I mean, it's, and I guess I suppose it's kind of making boundaries and making sure that, you know, when you have boundaries, they're respected, and that somehow gives you more of an air to be attracted to somehow. I don't know. You know, you're not kind of like freely giving everything away, and you have those kind of boundaries of the kind of people and the kind of work you want to do with others. So they tend to trust and respect you more is what I found.
Absolutely. These are great tips here, Jen. Jen, anything else you want to share with us, especially like where we can find you and reach out to you for any coaching sessions, or where we can find your fabulous podcast?
Yeah, sure. So if you head on over to curiouslyyou.com, all of my podcasts, all of the details about working with me are there. Or you could just send me an email. Let's keep it straightforward. Jen@curiouslyyou.com. Just let me know where you're at. And even if you just found this podcast interesting, just shoot me an email and just say, hey, I really like this podcast. And then we can start a conversation from there.
Fantastic. Well, Jen, thanks so much for your time. You've given us so much value and so much insight into what you do and how you've created this fabulous life for yourself. Even though it involves taking your dog out in the morning for a poop, it's still fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah, well, we've all got to do the dirty work there sometimes, so it's all part and parcel. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that you invited me on.
Monday Mocha with Ginny Sarasvati.